the world's great novels. Many years ago, according to an ancient Hindu legend, a large yellow diamond set in the forehead of an idol to represent the moon, a diamond as large as a plover's egg, was so revered by the holy men who guarded it night and day that it became known as the Moonstone. The National Broadcasting Company presents another great novel, The Moonstone, not only as an outstanding classic, but one which has contributed greatly to the technique and style of crime fiction as we know it today. And now, the first episode in the four-part dramatization of The Moonstone, another in our series of books that live the world's great novels.
Yes, the three Indian priests who guarded the Moonstone, I shuddered at the very mention of the name, guarded it well. But one day war came, and the glittering Moonstone was stolen from the forehead of the idol. It passed through many hands, until finally one day it was seized by one John Herncastle during the siege of Seringapatam, in 1799. It had been set into the handle of a dagger by that time, and in seizing it, Herncastle killed three Indians who had been present in the room where the dagger had been kept. As he died, the last of these Indians gasped out,
"The Moonstone will have its vengeance yet on you and yours."
Now, I am Gabriel Betteridge. For many years more than I care to remember, I have been house steward to my mistress, Lady Julia Verinder, sister of the ruthless John Herncastle, at her family seat on the Yorkshire coast near Frizinghall. And I was present when the Moonstone came into our immediate family as a legacy to my lady's daughter, Miss Rachel Verinder, on the occasion of her 18th birthday. Now, in telling the story of the Moonstone, I shall be compelled by circumstances to speak for others who know more of the Moonstone than I, and whose knowledge has come to my hand. Now, where shall I begin? Ah, yes. I will go back to 2 years ago, when Miss Rachel and young Mr. Franklin Blake were painting the door to her sitting room.
Franklin, you have a genius for dabbling. You just dabble in everything. Is this really what you call decorative painting?
Now, cousin, don't mock me. When I'm done with the painting of this door, you'll see how nice it will look.
And will the new design on the paneling reflect the places from which you've just returned?
It might.
Now, let me see. You've been to Germany, to France, and to Italy. Just which of these languages are you painting in?
Oh, silly.
Which language, Franklin? French?
Now stand aside, Rachel. I'll never finish my brushwork if you keep in my way.
And so intent upon his brushwork.
Yes, and if you don't look out, I'll paint your nose.
Oh, no, now
yes,
you...
Yes, I will.
Oh,
come
no,
here.
Franklin, don't. No, please, I'll get out of your way.
You better, you little baggage. Still, I'd like to daub your nose a bit.
Oh, you wouldn't dare.
In the interests of science, of course.
You and that new paint mixture of yours.
Rachel, it is not a new paint mixture. It is a new mixture to moisten paint with. I call it a vehicle.
It smells.
Nevertheless, it will dry in 12 hours. That I maintain as a record.
Oh, just imagine. Only 12 hours to dry. Franklin Blake, you're wonderful.
I accept the tribute. You know, this griffin I'm painting isn't coming out so well. I think I'll give him just a bit more neck.
Oh, Franklin, I can hardly wait for the party tonight. It'll be such fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I'll be wearing the Moonstone for the first time. Oh, Franklin, wasn't it sweet of Uncle John to leave it to me?
My dear, the Colonel was anything but a sweet man. Sometimes I wonder at his motive in leaving it to you.
Why, whatever do you mean? Well, come, Franklin, don't frown like that. Tell me.
In the first place, I suspect the Colonel had no great love for your mother.
Well, she was his sister.
True. But even a sister's affection would be somewhat taxed in having to deal with a man like John Herncastle. Sometimes I think your inheritance of the Moonstone is a monstrous joke played by a spiteful fellow.
Oh, Franklin.
And secondly, there are ugly stories connected with the diamond.
But how fascinating. What are these stories?
Oh, they're bound up in an old Hindu superstition.
Yes?
Something to do with three fanatical priests. Guardians of the Moonstone, you might say. Who are sworn to recover their treasured jewel, you know.
Oh, why, imagine that. It makes cold chills run down your spine.
Yes, I confess to a goose pimple or two on mine.
And you'll be leaving soon to fetch the Moonstone from the bank at Frizzingall so I may wear it at the party tonight?
Yes, Rachel. I'll be leaving in a few minutes.
And I've a new white dress to show off the Moonstone. Franklin, do you think you can fix it for me so that I may wear it as a brooch?
Oh, I think a bit of silver wire will do the trick.
Oh, and then when the guests are all assembled at the table, I'll make a grand dramatic entrance. A great yellow diamond glittering at my throat.
For the edification, I suppose, of your esteemed cousin, Mr. Godfrey Ablewhite.
Oh, now, Franklin.
Ah, yes, Mr. Godfrey Ablewhite. A barrister by profession, a ladies' man by temperament, and a good Samaritan by choice. That's what Gabriel says about him.
Well, I think you're both unfair to Godfrey. After all, he does engage in charitable works.
Oh, he does. Yes, indeed. Female benevolence and female destitution could do nothing without him. Yes, wherever you'll find a committee of good ladies in council, there you'll find Mr. Godfrey keeping the temper of the committee and leading the dear creatures along the thorny ways of business.
Well, that sounds like Gabriel again. Anyhow, you must admit, Godfrey is a very handsome man.
Oh, no.
Better than 6 feet tall, a beautiful complexion, and a head of lovely flaxen hair,
which falls languidly around his neck.
Oh, Franklin, I think you'll just be... Yes, Rosanna, what is it? Well, now, girl, don't just stand there staring with your mouth open. Speak up.
Your pardon, Miss Rachel, but your mother... I mean, Lady Verinder would like to see you.
Thank you, Rosanna. Will you tell her I'll be up directly? Rosanna, did you hear me?
Oh,
why are you staring like that?
Oh, yes, Miss Rachel, I'm going.
Franklin Blake, I think you've made a conquest in our poor Rosanna.
Huh? Oh, nonsense, Rachel, why... Hang it all, I've scarcely ever looked at the girl.
Maybe that's it. After all, she's a cripple, shy and sensitive and hoping to be noticed. Well, Franklin, I don't want to keep Mother waiting.
Yes, of course. That Rosanna. Odd girl. Wonder what she sees in me to surprise her.
I suppose, huh? It's your continental education.
Oh, it's you, Gabriel.
Yes, sir.
What were you saying?
Just remarking, Mr. Franklin, that there's some which are impressed with the varnish from foreign parts. Yes.
And at any rate, Gabriel, I'm glad you're here. There are some matters I'd like to discuss with you.
Such as?
Well, I've been rather uneasy these past few days. I told you that just before I arrived here from London, I'd been under the observation of a certain dark stranger.
Yes.
I managed, however, to give him the slip.
Yes, I recall you told me. He appeared to be an Indian, you say.
Yes, he did. And now I understand from your daughter Penelope that there were three Indians about the house today.
Oh, yes, I found them standing near the terrace. Well, I promptly showed them the gate.
Penelope said they were jugglers and had a little English boy with them.
Yes, and it was my impression, sir, that the boy seemed to be under their influence.
Huh?
He acted as if, well, as if bewitched.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, Gabriel, I'm off to Frizzingall and the bank to fetch the Moonstone.
I don't like that, Mr. Franklin.
Huh?
I don't like it. Any bequest from the wicked Colonel is best left alone.
Yes, I feel the same way. But I am acting for my father, who is executor for the colonel's estate. I have no other choice. I'll be back shortly.
Don't take too long, Mr. Franklin. The guests will soon be here for Miss Rachel's birthday party. The guests. Yes. Soon after Mr. Franklin's departure, the guests began arriving. Let me see now. There were quite a number. Yes, 24 in all. Old Dr. Candy, the family physician. Then there was Mr. Murthwaite, quite famous as an expert on Indian affairs. And, of course, the tall and elegant Mr. Godfrey Applewhite came, bringing with him his two large and lively sisters, whom I call the Bouncers. They're the kind who just can't be still for a moment. And there were others, to be sure, too numerous to name. All of the guests had assembled in the drawing room when Mr. Franklin returned. I spoke to him in the hall. Mr. Franklin?
Yes.
Have you the diamond secured safely, sir?
Oh, yes, Gabriel. Have it here in the breast pocket of my coat.
Have you seen anything of the engines?
No, not a glimpse of them. Oh, I say, where is Lady Bettender?
In the drawing room.
Oh, good. I'd like to have a talk with her before we put the moonstone on display.
And then, crossing the hall about half an hour afterward, I was brought to a sudden standstill by an outbreak from the drawing room. I can't say I was at all alarmed, for I recognized it as that form of caterwauling peculiar to the Bouncers. I entered the room, and there at the table stood Miss Rachel, like a person fascinated. She held the Colonel's unlucky diamond in her hand.
Look, Gabriel.
Oh, Lord bless me, Miss Rachel. Such a diamond. Why, it's as large as a plover's egg.
Gabriel, did you ever see such brilliance?
Never in my life. It's like the light that shines from the harvest moon.
And what do you think of it, girls?
Oh, Rachel, it's utter
divine.
Yes,
divine.
Oh, isn't it just beautiful? Godfrey, what's your opinion of my lovely moonstone?
Exquisite. Exquisite, my dear Rachel. Quite exquisite.
I think he means to say exquisite, Rachel. Isn't that what you meant, Godfrey?
Why, yes, Franklin. Isn't that what I said?
And what do you think of it, Mother?
Perfectly.
Child, yes, it's quite beautiful.
May I speak to you a moment?
Why, yes, Penelope, what is it?
Well, I'd like to talk to you privately in the hall.
Oh, well, come. Come, dear. Now, what is it, Penelope? Oh,
well, first I have something special for you.
What?
A kiss for your bald head.
Oh, there. Now, did you interrupt me just for that?
No, Father. I have the most wonderful news. Miss Rachel has refused him.
She has?
Yes.
And who is him, may I ask?
Why, the ladies' committee man, Father. That nasty, sly thing.
You mean Mr. Godfrey Applewhite?
Of course. Whom else? Oh, how I hate him for trying to supplant Mr. Franklin.
Oh, how do you know all this?
Well, because I saw Mr. Godfrey take Miss Rachel away into the rose garden. They were quite alone. I know because I waited behind the holly.
And how do you know she refused him?
Well, because they strolled into the garden arm in arm and they were both laughing.
Yes.
When they came back, they walked separately, neither one looking at the other.
Yeah.
Oh, Father, I was never so happy in my life. At least there is one woman in this world who can resist the precious Mr. Godfrey Applewhite.
Well, Penelope, you seem to know all about it. Mm-hmm. You're somewhat like your mother, bless her memory, in that respect.
Oh, wait a minute, Father.
Yeah?
That's not all I know.
Oh, dear. What now?
Well, I've discovered something about our second housemaid.
Rosanna?
Mm-hmm.
What about her?
Well, lately, you know, she's been moving about. Now I know the reason.
Huh?
There's only one explanation for it. Rosanna has fallen in love with Mr. Franklin.
Oh.
And at first sight, mind you.
Oh. I never cease to marvel at my Penelope. And that's because she does not. Now, my dear, if you'll excuse me, I must to the comfort of my guests. They're assembling for dinner.
And look at this wonderful brooch Franklin made for my moonstone with only a little strand of silver wire. Isn't he clever?
Oh, yes, very.
Thank you, Godfrey.
Well, Mr. Murthwaite, I understand you've passed much of your life in India. I've never been there, but they tell me it's quite a fascinating place.
At least it has a fascination for me.
Oh, I'd love to go there.
If you ever do go to India, Miss Verinder, don't take your uncle's birthday gift with you. A Hindu diamond is sometimes a part of a Hindu religion. I know a certain city, and in that city, a certain temple where, dressed as you are, your life would not be worth 5 minutes' purchase.
Oh, Mr. Murthwaite! Oh, heavens, I'm almost tempted to take off for India this very minute, Mr. Murthwaite. And what do you think about my moonstone, Dr. Candy?
What's that?
I say, what do you think about my moonstone, Dr. Candy?
Oh, my dear, if you will heed my advice, you will let me take it home and burn it.
Burn it?
Certainly. We would first heat it to such and such a degree, and then we would expose it to a current of air.
And?
Yes. And? So, little by little, with a puff and a puff, we would evaporate the diamond and thus spare you a world of anxiety in the safekeeping of so valuable a stone.
Oh, well, it seems I'm being confronted by all sorts of desperate alternatives.
What's that?
By the sound of it, if I'm not mistaken, it's an Indian drum.
Yes. And it seems to be coming from the terrace just outside.
Oh, let's run out.
And see! Everybody up. We're all going out to the terrace. Yes, come along. Hurry up. Come along. Come on.
Oh, Indians. Three of them.
Oh, and the jugglers. They're going to do tricks for us. What a lovely surprise.
Oh, and such a pretty little boy they have with him. Oh, I must give him a great big kiss. There.
Me too.
Gabriel. Hey. Get on the other side of Miss Rachel. No, Rachel. Don't go too near them. Stay here.
Oh, Franklin.
Oh, look.
Rachel, I wish you hadn't come out here wearing that cursed moonstone. I'm sure those Indians have seen it.
Mr. Franklin.
Yes.
Look. Look at Mr. Murthwaite.
Huh?
He's speaking to the Indians. Apparently in their native tongue.
Yes. And obviously their leader doesn't seem to like what our friend Murthwaite is saying.
No, he doesn't.
In fact, the fellow seems quite shaken.
Yes. Now. Yes, he's motioning his companions to leave. Now the little boy is passing the hat around.
Glad the beggars are leaving.
All right, good people. The exhibition is over. We'll go back to the dining room.
Rachel, I think you'd better go inside with the others.
Why?
I want to talk to Murthwaite, dear. Oh, you stay here with me, Gabriel.
Yes, sir.
Oh, I say, Murthwaite.
Yes, Mr. Blake.
Mr. Murthwaite, just what was it you said to the jugglers?
Jugglers? Why, those three Indians are no more jugglers than you and I are.
What?
Why, Mr. Murthwaite, did you ever see those rogues before?
No, never, Gabriel. I merely know what Indian juggling really is. What you have seen tonight is a very bad and clumsy imitation of the genuine article.
Well,
but Murthwaite, what did you say to the Indians?
I charged them with being disguised. Unless I miss my guess, those men are high-caste Brahmins of the Hindu religion.
Really?
You know, there's a mystery about their conduct I can't explain.
What do you mean?
They've doubly sacrificed their caste. First, in crossing the sea to England. Secondly, in disguising themselves as jugglers. I'm positive there must be some very serious motive at the bottom of it. Quite positive.
Well,
I think you're all right, sir. Yes, Gabriel?
What about tonight, Mr. Franklin? Suppose the Indians come back?
Oh,
they won't risk coming back tonight. The direct way is hardly ever the way they take to do anything. Gabriel, I'd suggest you let the dogs loose.
Eh?
Have you a big dog about the yard?
Two, sir. Mastiff and a bloodhound.
Excellent. I'd turn them loose if I were you.
Turn them loose?
Yes. Both breeds have one great merit. They are not likely to be troubled with your scruples about the sanctity of human life.
A as the dinner got on, I became aware, little by little, that this festival was not like others in the past. Although I plied the whole company well with wine, the cursed diamonds seemed to have cast a blight upon them. I do remember, however, how Dr. Candy and Mr. Franklin Blake fell to arguing.
Now then, Franklin. You acknowledge you sleep very badly at night.
Yes, Doctor.
Mm. From that, I judge your nerves to be out of order.
Really?
Now then, I'd prescribe a course of medicine for you immediately.
In my opinion, Doctor, your course of medicine is just another name for groping in the dark.
Oh, we have a cynic and a scoffer within our midst. Oh, Godfrey.
Yes,
Godfrey, Doctor. Tell me, what do you think of Franklin's inability to sleep?
Well, I'd say he's the one who's groping in the dark for sleep.
Fine.
Oh, but you're quite right, Dr. Candy. He should take some medicine for his affliction.
Well, at least I have one supporter in my friend Godfrey.
Exactly.
Now, it's getting late. I think we should be making our good night, eh? It was a fine party, Lady Verinder. But I think I'd best be leaving with the others.
Oh, must you go so soon, Doctor?
Oh, yes, yes. I've still a practice that requires my attention,
oh,
you
yes,
know.
Of course.
Good night, Rachel.
Doctor.
And, Rachel, don't forget what I said about the moonstone. Any time you want, I'll burn it up for you.
Good night, Doctor.
Good night, Dr. Candy.
Good night, Doctor.
Oh, Rachel, that reminds me. Where are you going to put your diamond for tonight?
Why, Mother, on my dressing table, of course, along with the other thing. Oh, no. That's not a very good idea. It might take to shining in the dark. I'm afraid that would terrify me.
Well, dear, you'd better find some other place, then.
Hmm. I have it. How about putting the moonstone in my Indian cabinet?
You mean the cabinet in your sitting room?
Yes, that's the one.
My dear, your Indian cabinet has no lock to it.
Well, good heavens, Mama, is this a hotel? Are there thieves in the house?
Well, now, Rachel, be reasonable. Why not let me keep the diamond for you tonight?
Now, Mother, I'm 18 years old and perfectly capable of taking care of my own property. You may come up to my sitting room, if you wish, right now, and watch me put the diamond in the cabinet.
Oh, very well, my dear. We won't discuss it any more. And I think it would be a good idea if all of us retired for the night. Godfrey?
Yes?
Franklin?
Yes, Aunt Julia. What is it?
I was just telling Rachel it was time we went to bed. Are you and Godfrey ready?
Oh, suppose I might as well, though I've been getting precious little sleep of late.
Franklin, why not take my advice and indulge in a little brandy and water before retiring? It would do you a world of good, I'm sure.
No, thank you, Godfrey. I think I'd rather do without it.
Very well. Very well. I was only suggesting it for your own good.
Well, then, if you gentlemen are ready...
Yes, Aunt Julia. I'm ready to go up, if everyone else is. Oh, you'll be sure and let the dogs loose, Gabriel.
Oh, yes, 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 Mr. Franklin.
Good.
And Gabriel, you'll take extra precaution about... locking up.
Oh, I will, my lady.
Come, Mother, we'll go directly to my sitting room and put the moonstone in the drawer of the Indian cabinet. Good night, Gabriel.
Good night, Miss Rachel.
Good night.
Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night. Oh, I can't say as I'm sorry to see this day come to an end. Oh, that reminds me. I'd better relieve the dogs of their collars.
Gabriel. Oh, Gabriel.
Oh, yes, Mr. Franklin.
Would you come here a moment?
Yes, coming, sir. Coming. Where are you?
I'm up here on the landing.
Oh, yes. What can I do for you, sir?
I've changed my mind about the brandy and water. Perhaps I may want some in the night. Will you have some sent up to my room, please?
Yes, Mr. Franklin.
Thank you, Gabriel. Good night.
Good night, sir. And sleep well. Sleep well. Hmm. The worries of the day had been too much for me, I suppose. At any rate, I had a touch of Mr. Franklin's malady that night. It was sunrise before I fell off at last into a sleep. About 7:30, I awoke and opened my window on a fine, sunshiny day. I bustled about for a few minutes, and then a short while later, as the clock was striking 8, I remember. I was on my way downstairs to chain up the dogs. Then suddenly I stopped short because Penelope came flying down the stairway after me.
Father, for heaven's sakes, come upstairs right away. The diamond is gone.
Are you out of your mind?
Oh, it's gone, gone. I tell you, and nobody knows how. Oh, come up and see.
Yes, yes, child. Come.
Oh, Father, can't you go any faster?
I'm not as young as I once was, child.
Oh, I see. See, the drawer is pulled all the way out.
Yes.
I myself saw Miss Rachel put the diamond into that drawer last night.
Let me see. Yes. The drawer is empty.
Miss Rachel, wasn't I here last night when you put the diamond away?
Miss Rachel, is this true?
The diamond is gone.
That is all she said. Then Miss Rachel withdrew into her bedroom and locked the door. I couldn't understand it. The moonstone had vanished. And yet here was the young lady acting as if it had been not the least bit of a surprise to her.
The Moonstone by Wilkie Collins is one of the world's great novels brought to you each week by the NBC University of the Air. Listen next week to the second episode of this four-part radio version of The Moonstone. And remember that your local public library can be a constant source of entertainment and information. To add to your enjoyment of this series, we recommend the Handbook of the World's Great Novels, which you may obtain by sending 25 cents to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. That's Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27. The Moonstone was adapted for radio by Robert Saxon. The music was composed by Emil Soderstrom, and the orchestra was directed by Bernard Berquist. The entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. Sherman Marks is featured as Gabriel Betteridge, Charles Mountain as Franklin Blake, and Geraldine Kay as Rachel Verinder. The part of Lady Verinder is played by Alma Plotz, Penelope by Jane Elliott, Rosanna by Ruth Shames, Godfrey Abelwhite by Sidney Breeze, Dr. Candy by Arthur Peterson, Mr. Murthwaite by Boris Aplon, and the Bouncers by Margaret Brayton and Ruth Shames. This is John Conrad. This program comes to you from Chicago and is a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. Your help is desperately needed now. It's needed more than ever by the people of Europe who are hungry and cold this winter. Without your help, many thousands of children and adults face starvation and death by exposure. CARE is ready to help you help them. For $10, you can send a nonprofit CARE food or textile package to anyone you select. CARE will hurry your package to Europe. The amount your $10 has received, send it to CARE, 50 Broad Street, New York 4, New York. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.